following takes place between 6 p.m. and 7 p.m.
Hello, and welcome to Tech Access Weekly, a podcast of unspecified length concerning news and events in accessible technology. This is episode 34 for Monday, April 12th, 2010. Back in the box. Monday.
In a pollen-covered place known as North Carolina.
Blech. I mean, you come in with the mail and sit it on the counter, and the counter is green.
Everything's a little crusty.
It's disgusting.
Supposedly, it is the worst pollen we've had in years.
We are recording, by the way, aren't we?
Why, yes.
Good. I was terrified it was going to be like episode 20 or whichever one it was we had to do all over again.
Don't remind me.
Okay, well, now we will get started.
Yes, and as we mentioned last week, on our website, techaccessweekly.com, we have a listener survey. And if listeners would be so kind as to take 15 or 20 minutes out of their day and fill out this survey courtesy of podtrack.com, we would greatly appreciate it to learn a little bit more about you and what we can do to make our podcast better.
Yes, indeed, and we'd appreciate it. As far as we know, it is accessible. If you have problems, please let us know.
Yes, and on the website, I have it set up now so that you can play the episodes using a Flash player. You can click a link that says play in window, in a new window, so it'll open up a new pop-up, or you can actually download the podcast itself or subscribe by iTunes.
Yeah, the iTunes link is working now. We had a direct message through Twitter asking us if it was alive and well, and it should be.
Yes, you can subscribe through iTunes using the FeedBurner link on the website, but as far as searching for us in iTunes, we are not there yet, but hopefully soon.
Yeah, we're getting there.
So anyway, now that we have bored you to death with
our website stuff,
business type things,
we'll start boring you to death with Windows updates.
Yes, it will be Patch Tuesday coming up April 13th, and Microsoft is going to release 25 patches. It's going to cover a wide variety of versions. I believe it's actually going all the way back to Windows 2000 and Office XP, Windows Server, all the way up to present. Should fulfill a lot of security holes that need to be dissipated.
Yeah, and I think that Internet Explorer flaw in Internet Explorer 8 that we've been talking about is going to be fixed as well. Seven of these, at least seven anyway, are critical updates and will require a restart after they are installed.
Yes, and hopefully everyone is using their automatic updates for
exactly.
That. And in other update news, Adobe Flash is going to release a update for their Acrobat Reader on Tuesday, and they will also be pushing down a new updater that will prompt you to update your software.
Yeah, I'm surprised they haven't had this for years and years, but they have been beta testing this new updater. It will prompt you to update, but it will not automatically install updates like Windows.
Yeah, I believe that is in a later release of the Adobe.
Yeah, of Adobe.
Updater.
And this applies to Adobe Reader, Adobe Flash Player, most of the Adobe things.
Yes, and if anyone out there is using Foxit Reader, there is still a security hole in that.
Yes.
But that has not been fixed as of yet.
No.
And one other issue that has come up is the Java runtime environment has a vulnerability that allows coders to access and run applications on your system. But for some reason, Oracle and Sun do not feel that this is really that urgent of a problem.
I didn't really understand the way it was working. Is it that the links have to be validated first and then the web page will be opened and run? and for some reason they're not validating correctly?
It is something like that. The Java runtime environment is something that will sit on your system. It'll run a standalone application kind of outside of the web browser. So if you were to go to a website that had one of these runtime environment code things on there, they could actually execute it and take over your system, possibly, from what I understand out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, ugly thing. Hopefully there'll be an update.
Hopefully so. Speaking of maliciousness, this is a complete, utter non-segue element here. There are some people in Utah and Arizona who are being prosecuted for identity theft and getting away with $4 million in tax refunds.
Apparently, for 3 years, from 2005 to 2008, this group of hackers were able to take the deceased taxpayers' information and actually file for tax refunds.
The way they're able to do this is that when you e-file with the IRS electronically, it doesn't check to see if you're alive, if the person filing is actually alive. All that's needed is an identity, you know, social security number, and proof of employment. So that's what they had. And they filed, didn't check to see if they were alive, and got away with all this money.
Yeah, they filed 1,900 fraudulent tax returns over that three-year period and had all the money sent to 170 different bank accounts.
Yeah.
So it's pretty extensive of a hack going on.
There's one guy that's at the head of this whole thing, pretty much. One of the people turned informant. This one head guy is in prison, and there is one person still at large for this thing. The head guy, Rig Maiden, I believe his last name is representing himself after having fired three attorneys. I don't think I'd want to deal with him either if I were his attorney. He is basically a psychopath. He claims he can do whatever he wants to the U.S. government and claims to have a stockpile of weapons someplace, but no one's been able to find it.
So hopefully the IRS is going to strengthen their process instead of trying to get refunds out as fast as possible.
Exactly. And they are seeking a $5.5 million in damages.
Yeah. And the biggest loophole to this was that the 170 accounts were ATM and debit accounts so that the hackers could actually run to an ATM and withdraw the money immediately.
Right.
Go figure. Anyway, the Social Security Administration is trying to help visually impaired users.
About time. The Social Security Administration is trying to make communications easier between itself and visually impaired customers. I guess you'd say customers. People receiving benefits who are visually impaired. Previously, they would just send you something through the mail, and depending on when you got someone to read your mail to you, it could be a long time. So now they are doing it in one of several ways. They will send it through the mail.
They'll send a standard print notice by first class mail.
And then they will follow up with a telephone call.
Yeah.
They will send the notice in Braille as well.
And they'll send a certified mail notice, and they'll also send you one in Microsoft Word format. And if one of those formats does not work for you, you can fill out a form, I believe it's 900 or something, through the Social Security Administration of America, and they will try and accommodate your needs.
Yeah. Another thing that is accessible, and unfortunately I don't have the phone number because I didn't think of putting it in here until just now, but the U.S. Census, if you are visually impaired and cannot fill out the census form that is sent to you by U.S. mail, and you wish to do that, you can call a toll-free number and have someone help you fill it out. I don't have this number, but if you search for it, you know, U.S. Census accessibility or U.S. Census toll-free number, you can probably find the number.
And we'll try and Twitter it by twitter.com/TA_weekly, and we'll also add it to the actual post on our website.
Because I know I sent that through Twitter yesterday, but just forgot to look back and see what it was.
Now, in another accessibility news, there's a Braille ECT converter.
Braille, B-R-A-I-L, E-C-T. This is in development, and I don't really understand this because I don't really know what it exactly looks like, but apparently it will fit over your hand like a glove, and it also has an earphone jack, so that if you are reading text, it will turn it into Braille or into audio. Now, I'm not exactly certain what it's interpreting, whether it's a print piece of paper or a computer screen or what. Apparently, there's not a whole lot written about this, and if there's a demo, I can't get it to work. Apparently, it's a visual demo.
So it must be like a fingertip scanner or something.
Something like that. Huh. But if you want more information on it, it is called the Braille ECT, B-R-A-I-L-E-C-T, one word.
Huh, that could be interesting.
Mm-hmm. I hope we'll get more, because I'm really curious about what it's going to be reading and interpreting, what you can use it with.
Yeah, if you could carry a scanner, glove that did scanning like that, you really wouldn't need a cell phone to do picture scanning.
Mm-mm.
But I'm going to guess that with the technology, it's probably a little bit expensive.
And probably a long way off in development, too.
Yeah. So
it'll be a while, probably.
More to come on that.
Yeah.
In the mainstream world of
advertising,
Apple and advertising, the I'm a Mac, I'm a PC ads apparently are coming to an end, according to Justin Long, who is the I'm a Mac guy.
It's interesting because he heard this rumor from the guy doing the PC,
John Hodgman,
in these ads. You'd figure that the Mac guy would hear it first. Anyway, apparently he says that these are being discontinued because Apple is moving on to something bigger and better in their ad campaign. We don't really know what they're doing. No one does. Or if they are in fact being discontinued, but that is the rumor. Apple, when these came out, these were fantastic. I loved them. I thought they were great. But now Microsoft is slowly coming back with its I'm a PC routine. With its ads, and Apple feels like they're being pushed out of this kind of advertising, so I guess now they want another method that will as funny and humorous, I guess.
Well, and maybe the success of Windows 7 out there is actually making it so that people aren't thinking of Mac versus PC as being that big of a deal.
Exactly,
anymore.
Exactly.
But the article also said that John Hodgman may actually be wanting to do something different, but why would he if he's getting all this publicity for his books and everything? He has some great books out there if anyone's on audible.com or looking for a print version. Anyway.
Yeah. The only thing that would have made these better is if they had been actual computers talking. That would have been cool. But they're just guys in t-shirts with PC and Mac on them.
Well, you've got the Mac guy. He looks like the grunge guy from the 90s. You know, he's wearing a t-shirt and a jacket over it and that kind of thing. A little real hip thing. And then the PC is standing there in his three-piece suit and tie, you know. So it's kind of the hip guy versus the snooty business guy.
Oh, okay.
So that's kind of the reason that they did that.
Mm-hmm.
If it was a computer, you probably wouldn't be able to tell the difference between them other than logo.
That's true.
And then which logo would you pick for
it's
PC?
The image that they're trying to present. Yeah.
Exactly. But the huge week for Apple continues in the fact that the iPad came out last week. Now, this middle of this week, they announced iPhone OS 4 with a lot of updates coming.
And this is coming out in the summer, and it will apply to the iPhone and the iPod Touch. The iPad will be getting some of these updates
in the fall.
It already has some, and we'll be getting these updates in the fall. This update does not include first generation iPhones or iPod Touches. Second generation devices have some of these features, but not all of them. They will not have the most important one for most people, multitasking, for instance.
Yeah, the multitasking is a big complaint that people are having with the iPad because you're pretty much limited to doing one thing at a time, unless it just so happens to be a Apple task that they allow to do that. They're also going to have folders so that you can organize your icons and programs that way.
And applications.
Yeah, and there'll also be updates to Apple Mail, and you'll also be able to get iBooks on the iPhone and iPod Touch, which is interesting.
Yeah. Also, another thing I thought was interesting was there's going to be a way for businesses to give their employees to upload employee applications to their employees' devices, and there will be some encryption enabled for that also. in other words, updates to its enterprise feature. And also, they're going to come up with social network kind of games to put on there.
Yeah, so that you can actually play games with other users mm-hmm. and actually play people in your same skill set.
Right.
Which is a big thing because, I mean, if you play some games and you go up against someone that's an expert player, you pretty much aren't going to have that much of a fun experience.
Exactly.
And in one final thing that they threw out there is the iAd platform, where mm-hmm. they're going to allow developers to support free applications by putting ads at the bottom of the application so that you can close that and
continue with the application.
Yeah. So it's not really sure whether people are going to care for that or not. And it's not really sure whether the ads will be limited to only free applications.
Right.
At this point, they're guesstimating or suggesting mm-hmm. that it'll only be for free. And two, these will not cover the older devices, which is something kind of new to the iPhone, iPod line of products, just because they've made everything sort of compatible over the years.
Right.
So now you're out of luck. Time to upgrade.
Mm-hmm. I think the article said, if you're a first-gen whatever user, you're going to have no updates, and you're going to like it that way.
Yeah, perfect Apple mentality.
Exactly.
But in iPad news, there is a website called Clicker that is actually going to convert video for the iPad.
It organizes videos in the iPad store, I believe, too, doesn't it?
Yes.
It presents video in an organized fashion according to categories and genres and all of this.
And I believe it's going to do some of the YouTube-style stuff using HTML5 and CSS 2 and 3.
Right.
To make it more user-friendly mm-hmm. and put another nail in the coffin of Adobe Flash.
Right.
And the iPad has been getting a lot of publicity as far as reviews by accessibility folks.
Yes, and I know a lot of reviews have been done by blind people who have been purchasing the iPad. There was one review done by someone deaf on the Signcast blog, but the blog died or something, and I couldn't find it, and I was going back to reread things for the stories today. So I will kind of gloss over some of the features for the hard of hearing, because I just don't really know a whole lot about them. That story just went away.
Yeah, I also looked at this story. It was there earlier mm-hmm. on Sunday, and then I tweeted it, and next thing I know, it's gone.
Exactly. But one thing that the iPad does have for those who are hard of hearing is kind of like an auto mono feature. So if your hearing is better out of one ear than the other, you can route the output in headphones to one ear with just a couple of touches of a button, that's kind of nice. The iPad does support closed captioning for a lot of the videos and things that are in the iPad store that have this. I think one of the complaints the user had was that not a lot of videos have closed captioning captions included in them. So at this point, there's not a whole lot of use that they can get out of it. For visually impaired people, of course, there's VoiceOver, which is, used very successfully solely by touch. It's the screen reader for the iPhone and iPad and Macintosh. And also, most of the applications, especially those developed by Apple for the iPad, are already accessible out of the box. This includes the Mail, the iBooks store, the App Store, and on down the line. Now, whether third-party applications are accessible or not is a completely different story, but those that Apple has included are definitely accessible.
And the iPad is getting a lot of reviews in the mainstream media as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Jeff Jarvis, who is a panelist on the This Week in Google podcast and also blogs on his website, buzzmachine.com, he has actually decided that after a week, he is going to rebox his iPad and send it back because he just is not finding a use for it.
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it.
So he has made a YouTube video, which I will play right now for this.
Could this be the first ritual reboxing of an Apple product? I'm taking my iPad back to the store. It's not really out of dogma, though I do share some of Cory Doctorow's fears about the closed world that Steve Jobs is creating, nor is it out of the product's limitations that I've complained about in my blog. It's going to get multitasking and other things. It's really just because I don't see a need for it. It's solving a problem that I don't think exists. Is the iPad the TV 2.0? Well, no, I've got a bigger, better TV right across there. Why watch it here? Is it Laptop Junior? Well, no, without that USB port especially, I can't do work on it. Is it my iPhone on steroids? Well, it will make phone calls and it does the same thing the iPhone does and it's bigger and heavier to carry around. No, I just don't see a use case for the iPad. So, I'm taking it back. Here's the reboxing.
So he has his box. He puts his adapter in, puts the instruction manual in, takes his iPad, places it back in the frame.
Pardon me, there's some smudges on it. We have to get rid of those, of course.
Oh, he takes his little pad and he starts wiping off the screen. Gives it a little blow as he looks back at the screen like, yeah, uh-huh. Putting it back in the box. Back in the box.
Back in the box.
So there it is. My iPad is reboxed and ready to go back. I'll pay a $50 restocking fee, but I'll consider that my early adopter's tax.
That is great.
That is funny. I mean, he does have a point. I think having one would be really cool, but I'm not exactly sure where I'd use it.
Yeah, I think if you're not going to get into the games and things like that, it doesn't have a
USB port?
No, not where you can connect something to it.
Oh, that's new. I didn't know that.
Well, you can only do the docking to a computer to transfer data.
Oh, I see.
A lot of people have been wanting to be able to actually connect other devices to it, you know. So. Mm-hmm.
Speaking of internet personalities, the CEO of Digg,
Jay Adelson,
yes, has resigned from his position at Digg, and he is looking for tips of what to do during his year or so hiatus that he's taking from work.
Yes, he stepped down this past Monday from the top position at Digg, and now Kevin Rose, who sort of started the company, has taken over, and there's been a lot of brouhaha about why and whether they got along, that kind of thing.
Yeah, the article I read doesn't really address that so much as what the results were from Adelson's Twitter experiment. A lot of people tweeted to him things like, spend time with family, oh, I don't know, that kind of thing. Just
go fly a kite.
Some of the more wacky ones were things like, go fly a kite. Is it too late to form a boy band? Going to the Grand Canyon.
And then one was to buy a motorcycle.
And a tent.
And a tent and take a camping trip across America.
And he said that he was going to do every suggestion that he got. So we'll take him up on that. we'll wait and hear if his band is formed and what kind of music they do and everything. We're just waiting on that.
It might be a little late for that.
Probably so. But it's still kind of funny.
Yes. And another way to use social networking is to get sued by your team.
Yeah, this is another privacy kind of story concerning social networking, in this case, Facebook. A 16-year-old teenager, very touchy, sensitive, rebellious age, had a Facebook account, and his mother was his friend. Well, she doesn't have custody of him, but she kept track of him through Facebook. They communicated and talked a lot. One time when he was over at her house, he had his Facebook page up on her computer, and she had been getting status updates from him saying things like, I was mad at a girl, so I drove 95 miles an hour down the road, and other things that she deemed that he had done that were inappropriate, according to her. So while he was at her house, had left the room with the computer in it, she went in and basically changed the email addresses and passwords associated with his Facebook account so that he was locked out of it. He thought this was harassment and has sued her in an Arkansas court.
This sounds like something that needs to really be mediated.
Pretty much, yeah. There are some really underlying issues here. She doesn't have primary custody of him, but is trying to control what he does. And you know, saying quite rightly that just because she doesn't have custody doesn't mean she doesn't care about him. However, is this something that is, I don't know, proper for her to do? Not to talk to her son about his posts and how they're inappropriate before locking him out of it. You know, it doesn't say that they communicated at all. It just says she went in there and it was a complete surprise to him when he found out that this was done. And I don't know exactly what she attempted to prove because he has a new account. It's not like he can't create a new account.
Well, it comes down to the old adage of until you're out of my house or mm-hmm. whatever, you know, when you're an adult, you can do whatever you want to.
Exactly. But
while you're in my house, you won't do these exactly. type of things. So I guess the question is starting to get, okay, how far can parents cover it and mm-hmm. actually enforce things now that there's like a virtual world?
Exactly. And it gets complicated by the fact that he isn't really in her house a lot. He lives with his grandmother. So that complicates the situation too. The expectations of both in the situation, you know, are different than I guess a little bit than they would be if she had primary custody of him.
Well, and she probably should have a little concern, seeing as how she's probably a considerable amount younger than the grandmother, and the grandmother may just not know mm-hmm. that these things are going on or not know to look for mm-hmm. it. So.
Oh, I completely agree. I just think that they should have talked about it first.
Yeah.
Before it got into a whole brouhaha.
Changing passwords and things, that might be a little bit overbearing a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
In science news.
In science news. We are about done with this here. In science news, pigeons rely on leaders when navigating in flocks. They play follow the leader just like everybody else in the animal kingdom. But what's interesting about the way pigeons navigate is that initially they'll start out with the smartest navigator at the top. But if the smartest navigator, you know, doesn't start out at the top for some reason, someone else will take over. The article likened it to a group of people who go out for dinner a lot, and usually one person picks, but a couple other people might also pick places to go, and that would be fine. So dominance shifts more in this situation than it does with, I guess, other animals in packs and collectives. And I think that's the thing that the scientists were interested in, is that the dominance patterns aren't really set in stone, but that they can shift accordingly.
So it comes down to the classic road trip. Does the wife sitting next to the husband who is driving actually get him to commit
exactly
to stopping for directions?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I guess the pigeon pushes the other pigeon out of the way and says, I'm stopping for directions.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
What were you thinking?
Farmville mania is sweeping the world. This is nowhere more apparent than last week. A British boy, I believe he was 12 years old, used £300 of his own savings and £600 charged to his mother's credit card to buy merchandise for his farm. Farmville is a game on Facebook, in case anyone doesn't know.
Yes, it is a game where you have a plot of land, you plant things, you buy houses and farm equipment and things like this in order to build your plantation.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently this kid used his mother's credit card to charge, what was it, £900? And I believe Fox News calculated that at like $1,400 on her charge card.
Something like that.
Something ridiculous. I mean, this is kind of the place where social gaming gets mm-hmm. you, because it sort of compels people to buy virtual goods that mm-hmm. actually represent nothing.
Yeah, it was interesting because she didn't blame her son for doing this. She blamed the credit card company for not realizing soon enough that these charges were being filed under a false name.
Hmm.
Exactly. So what does that tell you about some people's priorities? They'd rather not blame the person at fault. They'd rather blame the institution.
That is...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whatever. yeah, but some people, I mean, you play the free version, right?
Well, yeah, it's all free, but in order to do things quicker and build your farm or like Mafia Wars and things mm-hmm. like this, in order to build your experience, they want you to use like Farmville dollars. Mm-hmm. And through time, you accumulate dollars for free through using the game. But mm-hmm. if you want to actually do anything in a rapid pace, mm-hmm. you actually have to put in money to the system and buy Farmville dollars.
All right.
So like you might want to be able to plant lemon trees or something, but it may cost one Farmville dollar. And mm-hmm. in order to buy that, you have to spend X amount in order to get extra dollars.
I see.
So it's where Zynga is making a tremendous amount mm-hmm. of money, and people are actually doing it for virtual goods that equal nothing.
Exactly. And at some point, we'll do a demo of this, even though it is not an accessible game. The sounds are sort of fun.
Yeah, it's kind of silly.
So where are you? You planted some raspberries. Was it last night?
I was planting some raspberries. I did some rice and some squash and some soybeans and things mm-hmm. just to sort of play around with it. I don't see my fascination with it lasting for too much longer, probably. Because it's just blah.
And on that note, we will wrap this up.
Yes, we will.
Finally. If you would like to check out all the stories we considered, you can go to delicious.com/techaccess/34. You can follow us on Twitter at @TA_weekly. You can send us email and voicemails as well and comment on our website.
And again, if you would please take a moment and fill out our listener survey, we'd greatly appreciate it. And look for those extra links on the webpage where you can actually download the episodes manually or use your podcatcher of some sort.
Yes, and we will continue to update you on our progress with getting this podcast to be searchable on iTunes.
All righty.
Signing off from Raleigh, North Carolina, Pollen City, USA.
The Green Nation, or Yellow Nation. Depends on, I guess, which way you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
Bye. To contact the team for Tech Access Weekly, send an email to techaccessweekly@gmail.com, or you may leave a voice message at 260-2-ASK-TAW, 260-227-5829. Please visit our website at techaccessweekly.com.